All right, friends, I'm streaming live. This is Peggy Hall, and today is Monday. It's March 17th, 2025. Welcome on board. You can always get more of my comments at my Substack, which is peggyhall.substack.com. I want to thank all of you who responded to my question about your concerns and your confusion about tariffs. I did a video for you on my YouTube channel a couple of days ago, and it was titled "Caroline Leavitt is Ignorant on Tariffs." And she is, because she stated that tariffs are charged on the foreign countries. And many people erroneously believed that tariffs are like a fee or a tax that is paid by either the foreign company or the foreign exporter, the foreign country. And that's actually not the case. In fact, I'm going to share with you data. And actually, what we're going to do today is we're going to look at some of your comments. And I'm going to be doing a little bit of a general response to some of the information that you may be confused about. And this is the number two video in our series about the tough truth about tariffs. And we'll talk about why Trump and others believe that tariffs are a good thing, what the stated goals are of tariffs. And then I'm just going to hit a couple of highlights in this video showing that the intended goals of tariffs never really pan out. And look at some very recent data. In fact, in 2018, tariffs were imposed by Trump, and that's what set off the so-called trade wars. So Trump now is saying that Canada has tariffs on the United States, and that's true. And those were retaliatory tariffs put in place after Trump, who was the first president since Bush, it had been about 15 years. Bush imposed some in 2002, and he quickly got rid of them in 2003. He imposed some tariffs on the steel imports, and they actually had a negative effect. So as we go throughout this series, I'm going to be doing a very, very deep dive. We're going to be looking at which sectors are harmed. I'm going to be looking at data over the years, and you'll see how manufacturing jobs actually were lost in the Trump years. And it's troubling because it's one of the reasons why people put forth to bring back tariffs, to bring tariffs, is to bring back manufacturing. And there are many other ways of doing it. So what we're going to be looking at in this video, in fact, I'll kind of give you the punchline right now, and then we'll look at some of your comments and my responses from last week. So basically, free trade, which is the opposite of tariffs, and we are in a period of history where there has been free trade, because think about how countries and economies and communities develop. So when they first are getting off the ground, for example, there are economies and countries that we look at in Africa. They don't have robust manufacturing facilities. They are still really in an earlier development economically. So economists usually divide this into three categories. First is agriculture. So there are agricultural societies, and the United States still is a very strong exporter of agricultural goods. And then after a period of time, when the country has the resources, the know-how, the desire, the capital to actually get manufacturing facilities up and running, I mean, think about how long that takes. It can take anywhere from 2, 3, 4, 5 years or longer to actually get a manufacturing company up and running. You need to have the capital in order to do so. You need to find the land where you can do it. The regulations are so onerous now in the United States that that would be a simple way to actually reboot manufacturing, is to get rid of the onerous taxes, to get rid of the onerous regulations. But think about just getting the manufacturing up and running. You need the raw materials. You need the workers. You need logistics. You need people to manage those plants. You need to train the workers. You need to take care of all of the paperwork, the regulatory burdens, and so forth. So that is a bit more sophisticated than the agricultural sector. And then you move from agriculture to manufacturing, and then you go to services. And that's where the United States excels. We are the world's largest exporter of services. And that includes travel, that includes financial services, consulting, banking, financial, and much more. Again, we'll do a deep dive into these sectors and segments in upcoming videos, but I just want to lay the foundation that we are in a period of time where international trade is is hard to pull back from. And I'll give more examples of that. So countries by and large, and economists by and large, are in favor of free enterprise because it actually helps the stated goals of improving the economy, of increasing jobs, productive jobs. Anybody, as Milton Friedman has said, anybody can dig a hole and then fill the hole up again. That could be a job that you're paid for, but is it productive? Is it adding to the economy? Is it furthering these goals of bringing or rebooting or enhancing American manufacturing? I did a deep dive on this over the weekend. I did a lot of research and I found out that there is not one sector of the economy where the United States is not manufacturing. We are manufacturing our own steel, our own aluminum, our own lumber, our own energy, our own gas, oil, plastics, apparel, washing machines, cars. Every sector of the economy is well represented in the United States. The reason why people are buying an LG washing machine from Korea is because they want to. I actually had to get a new refrigerator and I specifically purchased a GE, General Electric. I think it was made in Kentucky. And the price was pretty much on par with LG. I did not want to buy a Korean made refrigerator. I have that choice. I don't have to shop at the dollar store where the, you know, products made in China come from. But there's also a very complex interconnection of raw materials that are coming into the United States that are then used in American manufacturing. So when we talk about tariffs, which are not a tax on the foreign country or the foreign company or the foreign exporter, they're actually a tax on the importer and it's passed down to the consumer. So even if you decide, like, I'm going to buy American, some of the components probably in that GE refrigerator, I don't know, I'm just giving a generalization, certainly in cars and computers, a lot of those components come from other countries in the form of raw materials. And they might even be brought in the United States, and then they go to Canada or Mexico to be machined and tooled and then brought back, imported back into the United States for the final manufacturing in an American-owned company. So it is a quite intertwined enterprise. I'll just use that word. So the bottom line that history has shown is that over years, and we can look at the Trump years in 2018, he was the first president since Bush to impose tariffs, and the net number of manufacturing jobs went down. They went down significantly. Close to 100,000 jobs were lost in all of the sectors of manufacturing because it's not just isolated. It's not just steel that might benefit from having a tariff on steel. There is a ripple effect, a domino effect throughout the entire economy. And I'm certain that you, like me, want to see a robust economy. We want to see no more inflation and tariffs. Historically, the record shows without deviation that inflation increases and net jobs are lost. And these are the facts that I'm going to be revealing to you. What I want to do now is I want to talk about keeping our economy open and dynamic and productive. I want to keep manufacturing robust. I want to help ensure that America is a great place to do business. And that's why other companies want to invest in the United States. Now, you may not have been around in the trade wars with Japan back in the 80s and 90s, where they were importing their products and people were buying them. But the dollars that the Japanese got, they actually reinvested in the United States, and there was a net benefit to the United States. So rather than just look at these isolated pieces, we need to look at the whole. So what I want to do is I want to look at your comments, and let's do that first. Then we'll finish up, and I want to share with you some of the top manufacturers in the United States that are going strong in lumber and steel and plastics. And by the way, windows. I did a comment in my video about Caroline Leavitt where Trump said that he ordered 1,000 windows. I don't know where he needed 1,000 windows. And he said that he couldn't buy American-made windows in North Carolina. Well, apparently he didn't look deeply enough because there is a manufacturer that's been in business for 70 years in North Carolina and not the only one. This one in particular has been in business for 70 years manufacturing American-made windows in North Carolina. There are American-made, not just an American-owned, not just a foreign company making windows in America, American-owned window manufacturers throughout United States. In fact, I need to have a window replaced and I am buying American made. I have that choice. And for someone who may not want to purchase an American made product, why should they be penalized in a system of fair trade and free enterprise to not have the greatest choice? Maybe they have a different budget. Maybe they, for whatever reason, it is their free choice. So we'll look at that. And I want to close out at looking at jobs that are directly supported by the import industry. There are millions and millions of jobs that people have directly related to imports. So when tariffs come on the scene and the sector of and the import sector shrinks, those jobs are lost. Let me know if you can think off the top of your head what some jobs are in that import economy. We'll look at that. So a lot to talk about. Again, this is a little bit more of an overview. This is only the second video that I'm doing on this, and I want to give a general overview to hit some of the top points showing that historically tariffs have hurt economies. They hurt the country that imposes the tariff. They hurt the other countries. It's almost, and it's called a trade war for a reason, because there are casualties. And there are other more beneficial, more effective, more efficient, more productive ways of actually achieving the stated goals. So we'll take a look at that. And in the subsequent videos, we'll do a very deep dive. We'll look under the microscope. I'll show you the numbers where I'm coming up with this information as well. So let's take a look at this. We're going to look at your comments. Let me share my screen. And I'll start with this first one here. These were comments from you from the other day. And I want to thank all of you for your very thoughtful comments and for your very, unlike Caroline Levitt, that kind of got heated under the collar, a little hot under the collar. No one was insulting. There was a fair exchange of information. And it's my pleasure. This is my background, actually. I have a master's degree in international policy studies. So I've studied intensely international economics, international trade, international law. It's just a fascination that I have. Why certain political systems and certain economies, why they result in prosperity for the individuals in that country, and why certain political systems and economic policies actually harm the individuals and harm manufacturers and harm productivity. So I've always been curious as to why the United States has been prosperous, where there has been a large amount of well-being for a large amount of people, and how there is no other political system or economic system that has worked to this extent. And so that's just one of the things that I have been studying for many, many years. And I'm happy to talk about it on this channel. And I'm grateful that you asked your questions. All right, here we go. Let me share my screen and we will take a look. So this one came in from Janine, and she said, comments show a lot of believers in tariffs. And that's true. Many people have been, as you know, because you may have thought the same thing, thought that the country was the one that paid the penalty, so to speak. And they didn't realize that it actually fell on the consumer and on the American importer and on the American manufacturer, because they are importing, in many cases, those raw materials. So Janine says, hopefully Peggy will do her usual excellent work. Thank you, Janine. Asking the right questions and finding good data. People don't understand that the economy is dominated by transnational corporations whose only motive is profit for their shareholders. If higher profits can be made in foreign countries, they will build their factories overseas. Hence, the outsourcing waves beginning in the 80s that resulted in the Rust Belt, the maquiladoras in Mexico with the manufacturing companies, and the energy-hungry back-and-forth shipping of parts of finished goods over our north and south borders. She goes on to say, the only way big business will find the profits they seek in the U.S. again is if the conditions they can find in developing countries are replicated here. Low taxes, low worker pay. Now, this is Janine's opinion. I do want to respond to this. Long hours, poor working conditions, corruption, and weakened environmental protections. In short, turning U.S. workers into sweatshop workers is the only way reindustrialization will happen. Now, I'm not going to agree with her completely, but I do want to share her points here. I think they're very well stated. She says it's the only way that big business will find it more profitable to move back here instead of the many places overseas that still offer all of those goodies to shareholders. She goes on to say also the poorer Americans become, the less able big business will be able to sell their products here because we can't afford them. It makes much more sense for them to locate their factories in, say, Asia, where the economies are booming, the people's standards of living are rising, so they have more money to spend to buy the products big business is making. All right, she made a lot of good points here, and I do want to say that these are very good points. And number one, the purpose of a company is to make a profit. Corporations, private businesses, very few of them, unless they are a nonprofit or a not-for-profit, are not in business to do good. They are in business to provide a service or a product at a profit so that they can make money. And if it is a publicly held company, their shareholders can make money. Now, there are a lot of private companies like In-N-Out, right? It's a hamburger chain. They're not held by any shareholders. They get to make their own decisions, and the profits that they make go to themselves and their own shareholders. I think also Enterprise Rent-A-Car might be another one that's not traded on the stock exchange, but the principle is the same. Companies cannot remain in business unless they make a profit. I'm certainly not in favor of any companies making a profit by cheating, by stealing, by taking advantage of their customers or by taking advantage of their employees. Absolutely not. I believe that companies should be run ethically. And in some cases, companies, when they're not run ethically, will end up going out of business. Sometimes not. They take advantage of people. But her statement is true that companies need to make a profit. So think about that. And let's say that you are your company and you sell shoes, and you can purchase shoes from Italy that are very expensive because of the individual artisan craftsmanship. And you can also purchase shoes that are made in the United States. There are shoe manufacturers in the United States, and you can also purchase shoes made in China. And you, as the shopkeeper, as the retailer, have the choice of what products you want to purchase, you want to import, and what you want to sell. Now, let's say that there's someone who is an artisan, and they are making handmade shoes here in the United States, and it probably does exist. And now they need to import, let's say, for example, leather from Italy. I don't think the United States has any tariff on leather imports from Italy, but that may happen because Trump is talking about across-the-board tariffs for the European Union. So now that individual who is making shoes is going to be importing that leather because it's of higher quality or just prefers to buy that leather. And now those shoes are going to cost more, and that is going to be passed on to the consumer. So there are certain products that are produced in certain countries because they have what's called a competitive advantage. They can either do them more cheaply. In the case of China, there are government subsidies where the government helps those manufacturers make a product and export it to the United States. And I think that is really what Trump is talking about. That bothers him that China has that unfair advantage from the subsidies of the country. And it appears as though he wants to punish China. He says that China is ripping Americans off. And there's also the issue of China stealing intellectual property, but that is completely separate from tariffs. I don't think any amount of tariffs would prevent China from stealing intellectual property. There probably are Chinese that are here that are serving the government, and there are other ways of going about that through investigations, FBI, and so forth, kind of a topic for another day. But what I wanted to talk about is the need for companies to make a profit. So they are going to source their materials in such a way that they will be able to make a profit. So let's come back. Let's go back to her comments because I still want to refer to those. And I want to thank again, all of you who left these very thoughtful comments. So then she goes on to say that the only way big businesses will find the profits they seek in the US is if they can have low taxes. I agree with that. And then she also says low worker pay, long hours, poor working conditions, corruption, and weakened environmental protections. I agree that that probably does exist, but I don't think that that's required in order for the United States to be profitable. Lower taxes and lower regulations definitely are going to be the way to go. There are so, let me know if you run a company. Let me know if you run a manufacturing. I actually did manufacturing of my own products some time ago before 2020 hogwash, and I produced something called Youth Serum. Many of you are asking me to bring that back. It's just a handcrafted, natural, healthy serum that you put on your skin, and people loved it. But my supply chain was interrupted during all of the cooties hogwash, and it was more difficult for me to get the raw materials that I needed and so forth. And people just weren't buying things. And I used to have wellness events, and I had different ways and different channels of selling that product, and it pretty much dried up because people were not doing anything in person any longer. So it was just me doing it. I was not running a company or anything, because when I found out how expensive it was and how much time it took to actually get a manufacturing, even a light, small manufacturing up and running, it takes time, it takes capital, and there are so many regulations that are in the way. And then there are corporate taxes, there are payroll taxes, there are so many other ways that the government derives revenue aside from just our income taxes. In fact, I want to do a whole video for you. Maybe I'll touch on it a little bit in this one as to how Howie Lutnick, the Commerce Secretary, who has a very colorful background, he's known as the most hated man on Wall Street because of the way that he treated his employees at Cantor Fitzgerald. Remember Cantor Fitzgerald? Yes, 9/11, that suffered a lot of losses in 9/11. But wouldn't you know, Howie Lutnick was very lucky. I call him Lucknick. He just happened not to be at work that day. Yeah, his life was spared. But anyhow, he is going around saying that we're going to get rid of the IRS and we're going to have an external revenue service. Actually, let me just talk about that right now, because it's so far off base that I think he needs to go back to school, and maybe he skipped his economics class. So let me just, actually, I want to share with you some of this data. And I, as I say, I've been doing a lot of research on this. It's an area that I find very fascinating, and I kind of dusted off the books and got back up and running with my knowledge in this area. So let me share my screen, and we're going to take a look at exactly how much money comes from income tax. Remember, there's a lot of revenue that's collected. Income tax is only about 50% of the revenue that is collected by the federal government. So here's the data from 2024. If you're interested in my Substack, I have a list of all of my sources and references, all of the different places where I'm getting this data. I'm referencing different ones, and I'm cross-checking to make sure that my data is accurate. So in 2024, the United States collected $2.4 trillion in income tax. That means money that came from you, out of your pocket, from income that you made. Now, that's about 50% roughly of the total government revenue that came in at $4.8 trillion. The rest of the money that the government brings in is from payroll taxes. I think we should abolish those. That right there will allow the companies to have more money. Now, I have paid payroll taxes. It doesn't go to my employees. It goes directly to the government. Why should I have to pay the government because I have an employee? Get rid of the payroll taxes. Get rid of the corporate taxes, or limit them, or keep them at a consistent rate. And then there are capital gains taxes. So if you bought a house and then you sold a house and you made money on that house, that is called capital gains. If you invested in the stock market, let's say with $1,000, and over 10 years or 20 years, you made $5,000, $10,000, you're going to pay capital gains on that money. That goes to the government. And then there's a smaller amount of money that comes from things that the government actually charges money for, such as admission to federal parks and so forth. So look at these numbers. The government brought in $4.8 trillion, all right? And the government spent $6.75 trillion, leaving a deficit of $1.83 trillion. Friends, I don't have a third grader, but if I did, the third grader would say, this is not a problem of income. This is a problem of expenditures. Why doesn't the government stick to its shopping list and tighten the purse strings instead of harming the economy, harming American manufacturing, reducing jobs, increasing inflation, actually increasing demoralization, right? People are feeling like, I don't want to spend. I don't want to go on a vacation. People that are running these manufacturing companies may not be hiring now because they are concerned that this trade war is going to have a negative effect because hundreds of years of history has shown that trade, that tariffs never work. They never achieve the stated objectives. There are other ways that can achieve the stated objectives. So let's look at Howie's math here. Howie says, we are going to replace this $2.4 trillion with an external revenue service. So people think, all right, let me just go face to face here. People think that when Lutnick says, we're going to replace the IRS with the External Revenue Service. There are two problems here. Number one, people think that China and Mexico and Canada, the governments of China, Canada and Mexico, or the companies of China, Canada and Mexico are going to be paying that tariff. And you know now that that's not true, even though Trump has said it many times and Caroline Leavitt has said it. I have not heard Howie say that exactly, but he did say that the other countries are going to pay for it. So I'm not quite sure how that works out because the other countries don't pay for it. But furthermore, not only do the other countries not pay the tariff, you and I do. Furthermore, even if the other countries did pay the tariff, the math doesn't add up. Let's look at the math. All right. I just like to look at the facts. I like to work with data and I like to work with the numbers. So here are the numbers. So currently in 2024, imports that we brought into the United States, companies and you and I, it was valued at $4.1 trillion in imports. All right. Remember, there's a robust import sector that relies on imports. There are dock workers. There are shipping services. There are warehouse people. Imagine you live in Los Angeles. You want to invest in a warehouse in Long Beach and you scrape your money together. Maybe you get a mortgage and you buy a warehouse because you know that imports have to come in and they have to stay somewhere before the trucks come in and they're, trucked off to wherever they need to go. So the trucking industry relies on imports. There are logistic managers. And let's say that Trump now puts a tariff and the imports shrink. And suddenly your warehouse is empty and suddenly you can't pay your mortgage and suddenly you're underwater and you're not making money. And you thought that this would be a good business to be in is running a warehouse. And then the landlord now has an empty building and maybe he has a mortgage on his property and he's not able to pay his mortgage. I'm giving you an example of how intertwined international trade is and how robust the import sector is. So exports, we exported services and goods that are valued at $3.9 trillion. It's a very, very small trade deficit here, friends. Very, very small. $4.1 trillion valued on imports, $3.9 valued on exports. Why don't we export more? That would really increase manufacturing and productivity and wages and all of that. So there are other ways of achieving the goals. That's the big picture that I want to present here. Now, the United States is the leader in exporting services. It is the world's number one exporter for services. So we don't have a trade deficit in services. Why not focus on that? Why not focus on what it is you do well? Before we go back to the bottom line there, I want to go back and talk about my youth serum. So A basic principle of business is that you do more of what's working. You don't do more of what's not working. So you might find that you are really good at selling products at a farmer's market. And then you try to sell them online, but it costs a lot of money to run ads and you need an ad manager and you're not getting the leads that you need. So you decide to double down and do more ads and hire more people to do more online marketing. And it's not working. What's working is you going and selling at the farmer's market. So a basic strategy of business would be to do more of what's working. So you would do more sales at the farmer's markets. Now, I'm just giving that as an example. It might be the exact opposite for some of you. You may find that you're doing better selling things online. And when you tried to go in person, it wasn't working. And the bottom line is you do more of what is working. I actually was creating handmade organic soap that went along with my youth serum, and I loved it, and everybody loved it, and it smelled so good, and it was natural and organic, and it didn't leave your skin dry, and I had these beautiful natural essences, beautiful aromas, but it was so darn expensive to make, and it was so heavy to ship that I couldn't sell it at a price that made sense. I was actually losing money making and shipping the soap. I had to have my raw materials shipped to me from Texas, by the way. I did not bring the materials in from China. That was my choice. I could have done so. By the way, you know what happened to me once? I was putting together a gift package and I wanted to have a skin brush, and I was just intent on finding an American producer of these skin brushes. And I was looking online and I was trying to find, and finally I found one, believe it or not, in North Carolina. And I ordered the skin brushes that were going to be a part of this gift set with my youth serum and the soap. And I brought them, or I bought them, and they were shipped to me, and I opened them up, and guess what? On the back of the brushes, it said made in China. My error. I didn't dig deep enough. I didn't ask the supplier in North Carolina where those brushes came from. So it just takes your due diligence, and some people could care less. They want a skin brush from China. It doesn't bother them, but I was trying to source in the United States, even though it would be more expensive. So I didn't double down on the soap. I didn't insist that I was going to be productive in soap manufacturing. I wasn't going to hire people to make the soap, and it cost me money. I couldn't sell the soap at a price that the people wanted, that my customers wanted, and that would allow me to continue to make the soap and to continue to make a living. So you focus on what you do best. And what the United States does best is exporting services. So there's another part of this where people are talking about national security, and I'm going to cover that in a separate video coming up. I will give just a general comment that the assumption goes forth that we should not rely on getting our products from other countries, because what if they shut off the supply? And that's a very good argument, and it's one worth looking at. So I looked at it, and I found that there is not a sector in the United States where we do not have manufacturing. In fact, we are leaders in most of these sectors: in steel, in aluminum, in oil, in plastics, in manufacturing of parts and so forth. Yes, there is an international component to that, but let me just flip that argument on its head for a moment. If we are, and I'm not saying I'm promoting this, but I want to show you another perspective to that argument. Let's say that you are concerned about national security in terms of steel. You want to make sure that the United States never runs out of steel. Otherwise, we won't be able to make bombs to bomb other countries, or to protect ourselves, or to make armaments or weapons or whatever we need steel for. It's in a lot of products. So I would say that actually, yeah, I understand that argument. So let's take it a step further. If we want to maintain dominance in that field, it makes sense to me to import as much as we can from everybody else, so that now we're using up their resources. I'm not saying that I'm going after countries, but if you're taking the argument of national security, it makes more sense to have them provide the material so you're not using up your own natural resources. I mean, it's just simple when you think about it. You could also stockpile. You could have other ways of making sure that your national security is not at risk other than tariffs. That's my point. There are other ways of increasing manufacturing. You can have reduce the regulations, number one, get rid of the payroll taxes, reduce taxes across the board so that people keep more of their money. And guess what they do with it? They spend it on things. And when they spend it on things, the manufacturer has to make more. And then they have to hire somebody because they're so busy, they have to put on another shift. And then they have to make another manufacturing plant because they're making so many products because the people that kept more of the money that they earned were able to buy more products. That's the beauty of low taxes and deregulation. I don't know if you were around in the Reagan years, and I certainly don't agree with a lot of his policies, but he did have lower taxes and less regulation, and the economy was booming. And those are two reasons that economists agree on for that boom. So let's go to the punchline. And I know I've gone a little route like this, but I think it's important, kind of like international trade. It's all interconnected. So we're going to look at Howard Lutnick's ill-founded idea to replace income tax with the External Revenue Service. Unfortunately, the numbers don't add up. I think it would be wonderful if China could just pay for our income tax. Doesn't work that way. All right, let's take a look here. Kind of reminds me of Obama. Hope and change. What were we hoping for and what changed? It's these platitudes. You have to dig deeper. All right. So we're looking at $2.4 trillion in income tax in 2024. All right. That's how much the United States brought in. They collected. I'd like to say they stole from you and me. And they got other income in these other ways. They overspent. It's like you spending too much. Can you keep a budget and spend? I have to spend within my means. I don't keep debt on credit cards and so forth. I budget my money. I budget my time. I budget my food. And I want to be responsible. Why can't the government be responsible? So they overspent by a lot of money. And increasing taxes and increasing tariffs, you never are going to limit it. So let's limit the spending instead. So here we're looking at this. How would you replace the $2.4 trillion in income tax? How are you going to replace that from tariffs on imports? We only bring in the import. Imports are only valued. Let's just round it out to, you know, 4 million, all right? Or 4.11, fine, we'll be exact. We imported goods and services valued at 4.11 trillion. How do we get 2.4 trillion from these import tariffs? That would be a 50, I'm just doing rough math, 50% or more, actually more, to replace that money going to the government. And remember, that money comes from you. That money is paid to the Department of the Treasury. It's collected actually at the border. It's collected by the Customs and Border Protection. Let me share with you a comment that came in from a healthy American. And that was exactly, okay, here, let's take a look at this. So, and I want you to check everything that I'm telling you. All right. You're savvy. You're sophisticated. You can do the research as I'm doing. And here we go. So Paris Smith, a couple of days ago, with my first video on this topic, said, I bought some supplements from the EU, right, from the European Union. Not only did I pay the $50 tariff, there was a little typo there, the package was delayed due to Homeland Security, and the post office held the package hostage until my unpaid tariff was paid in full. And my reply was, yep, and some confused people think that the foreign country or company pays the tariff and it somehow helps the American consumer. So this person is paying the tariff on the supplements because there is a tariff imposed by the United States on the EU. Let's take a look at some of these other comments that we got. This was my comment to the previous video. And I simply said, people don't understand that the economy is people don't understand that the economy is dominated by transnational corporations whose only motive is profit for their shareholders. I went out on a limb and I said, it's likely the corporations that will benefit from these tariffs will be those run by Musk. Peter Thiel and others backing Trump and calling for these destructive tariffs. Think about it. You can have people playing the market, considering that for a short time, maybe a year, that steel production in the United States will have a higher value and they might bring in more revenue because the other steel that's coming in is more expensive, so the United States can be more competitive. History shows that that's short-lived. Okay, when Trump did that in 2018, the total manufacturing jobs in the United States started to fall until close to 100,000 jobs were lost because of those tariffs. So the historical record shows that the tariffs work. But in the short term, there could be maneuvers that are made that will benefit those that have the money to invest in it. I gave an example in my first video on this series about Solara, which was a, you know, energy, solar panel company for green energy. And I was shaking my head back then. And I thought, this is not good. The government is giving all this money to Solara. I have to do a deep dive on that. It was many years ago. And I have to go back and see who got the money from that after it went bankrupt. So a lot of these things, unfortunately, hurt many people and only benefit the few. All right, let's take another look. I'm going to share my screen and we'll take okay, here are a couple of comments that I would like to reply to. So we'll take a look here. Star says we need manufacturing in our country so that we do not have to depend so greatly on other countries. And then I demonstrated that, in fact, I will demonstrate in just a moment. I'll just do a quick glance, and then in upcoming videos, we'll do a deep dive. We already have manufacturing in our country. So let's do that. All right. I want to show you some of the, top steel manufacturers in the United States. Here they are. The largest steel producer in the United States and largest recycler of scrap, Nucor, Steel Dynamics, U.S. Steel Corporation, which, by the way, is just about to be purchased by Japan. That is being held up in the courts. They made an offer, and it is still kind of going back and forth. I couldn't get any information other than the Japanese are suing in order to go through with this deal. All right. These are all of the we have plenty of steel manufacturing in the United States. Top 10 American window manufacturers. We'll have to send this to Trump. Everybody can email it to Trump. Anderson, Windows and Doors, Pella Windows, Marvin Windows, Milgard. I've seen all of the advertisements for these. Geldwin, Alside. I don't even see the ones that are local to my area where I am here in Florida. We are purchasing not only an American-made window, but owned by an American-owned company. I go the extra level because you can have American made, but it's owned by another company, owned by another country and another company. All right. We've furniture made in the United States, very good furniture made in the United States. As a matter of fact, I've purchased furniture at Ashley, a steel case. I would love Herman Miller, a little bit out of my price range, but there's something for everyone. Top 10 American computer manufacturers made in the United States, friends. All right. Pharmaceutical companies operating in the United States. American Plastics, when I did have some plastic things that I did, you know, for my own holding of my raw materials and so forth, I purchased American made. So there's the only sectors I could find where American manufacturing has declined is apparel, textiles, and printing. Now, I need to do a little more digging, but it seems to me that most apparel comes from China, also Vietnam and Indonesia, right? East Asia, other places. Textiles coming from India and printing coming from India. And I think also it might be in the European Union. But you still can get it done in the United States. It is more expensive. But every sector of the economy is represented by robust manufacturing in the United States. And you can buy American. Here are American owned, American made brands in the United States. Check it out. And again, I can do a deep dive on that for you, but I just wanted to give you the facts that we do have manufacturing in our country. And then this comment said the IRS is going away. Tariffs are no big deal. All right. I would like to know if JD Leslie is on board this evening and if the knowledge that you've gained through my presentation has shown that your statements are incorrect and that the IRS is not going away, because even if we taxed American consumers, because remember, tariffs are a type of tax on the American consumer and American manufacturers, that it would have to be well over 50% in order to replace the IRS. And that's not going to happen because of the harms that tariffs inflict. And there is a record that goes back as long as our country has been in existence showing that tariffs are destructive to the economy. They drive up inflation. They drive down wages. They drive up unemployment, and no one benefits. Okay. And now Doe says, wow, I always thought that if country A imposed a tariff on country B pays the tariff. Now I hear that it's the person or the company that's bringing the product in that pays the tariff. Mind is blown. I'm going to applaud Doe. It's awesome. He was able to increase his knowledge. He has learned the truth about tariffs. And I said, glad you can see it. Many are falling for the false narrative that the foreign country or company is charged the tariff, but it's the exact opposite. All right. Future Sight says tariffs will give large corporations a valid reason to raise prices. And if they're given that, they will use it. By the time this country establishes new factories, it will well be out of employment time in my life. So that's not going to help me at all. And if there are tons of jobs that pay just enough to live in a 15-minute city, how is that winning? As prices go up, the wages would have to go up. Also, every time, that's not where I'm going with this. All right. That was my response. Celine says, great points, but we do need more support for producers of our food. We rely on imports too much. They face similar challenges, so it may not take much for the belly to hit the backbone here. And my comment was, and American tariffs historically have resulted in punitive tariffs from other countries on our agricultural exports. So American tariffs harm American farmers. I think everybody understands how that works. So Canada famously is saying, we're not going to carry your cream and your chickens. And I mean, I did a deep dive. The way that the Canadian importing bureau is delineating everything that a tariff is going to go on. I mean, it is very precise and explained in great detail, and it's going to harm the American food manufacturers. You see, the bottom line is that it's called a trade war because there are casualties. If it was short term and it rebounded and you had to have a little bit of pain for future gain, you know, I might be in favor of it. And I think some people would be. But the historical record shows that as long as the United States has been in existence, and only not only for the United States, but for other countries, everyone is harmed by the tariffs. There are other more productive ways, more beneficial, more efficient ways that work in order to increase manufacturing, bring down inflation. Number one, stop printing money. That's the only reason why, one of the main reasons why inflation goes up. And by allowing consumers to have a free choice, it actually promotes individual liberty. And I'm in favor of that. Okay, couple more comments. We'll finish out by talking about the import sector. Probably do a deep dive on all of these topics that we've touched on because there's so much to talk about. All right. Here we go. Let's see. Okay, I think we've been through all of them. There is one comment that I responded to, and it must have been on an earlier comment, but my response to someone was, you are ignoring somebody who said, we need tariffs, we need to improve the economy, back jobs. And my comment was, you are ignoring the 20 plus million jobs related to imports. Importing is a huge sector of the economy, with shipping, dock workers, logistics, truck drivers, retailers, warehousing, etc. Certainly you don't want to put them out of a job, do you? There is no industry that is not represented by American manufacturing. I just showed you that. You already have a choice to buy a Ford instead of a Toyota. You have that choice. Although Ford probably has some imported parts, and Toyota might, well, if they're made in the United States, they may also, they're paying their workers here in the United States to make Toyotas. So I don't see that as negative. And then to buy a Maytag made in the US, I think they're made in Ohio. And you can buy that instead of an LG. And the prices are about the same for the same, pretty much the same product. I did a lot of research before I bought my refrigerator. So my question is, what kind of appliances do you have? Where are they made? Do you shop at the dollar store? I'm speaking to people in general. You already have a choice to buy American. What makes you think that tariffs will magically restart textile manufacturing in North Carolina? I guess that was the comment. He said that textile manufacturing in North Carolina. In fact, I know that it's true. I know people that live in Alabama, and the textile manufacturing, it's shuttered there. Absolutely. But I don't know that it's magically going to restart, because it takes a long time and a lot of money. And who's going to be doing these investments when that ship may have sailed? Why sell the soap when it's too expensive and people don't want to buy it? I stopped selling the soap and I focused on the youth serum. Why not focus on what the United States does best, which is exporting agriculture, exporting oil, exporting food, exporting services? We already are leaders in those areas. There are other ways to incentivize, which I laid out in my previous video. And if you'd like to hear other approaches, other than tariffs, which the record clearly shows are deleterious to the American economy and consumers. All right. What we're going to do now is finish off by looking at how important the import sector is of the economy. I think a lot of people forget about that. And let me know if you have worked in the import sector of the economy, if you know anybody that does. I have a couple of friends who are truck drivers, and they make money by getting the products from the warehouse. Remember, the warehouse person, that's his job, is to have the warehouse, and that's how he's earning a living. And they fill up the truck and they drive the truck and they drop off the products. So that would shrink if we shrink the imports. I mean, it's just logical when you think it through. So let me share my screen, because I did compile some information, and in my Substack, I will have links to my sources and my resources in case you would like to do some deep digging as well. I find it fascinating. Let me know if you do as well. Imports directly support jobs in logistics, shipping, warehousing, customs clearance, import-export coordination. And then indirectly, there are jobs, of course, in retail, distributors, and other sectors that rely on imported goods. So here are directly supported jobs by imports. And if we were to reduce imports, people are going to lose their livelihood in these jobs. It's a fact. I have data to support it. Import-export coordinators. They manage the logistics and the documentation involved. Actually, I'll do a deep dive on this coming up, but let's just take a brief look. We've got freight forwarders, customs brokers, logistics specialists, warehouse workers, truck drivers, and then indirectly benefited jobs, retail workers, distribution workers, marketing and sales, and companies that rely on imported goods for their raw materials so that they then can produce a product and sell it to you and have people be employed and bring home a paycheck. 21 million jobs was the number that I researched and found. 21 million jobs depend on the import industry. The point of this video was to respond to your comments and concerns. It was to hit a couple of the highlights and to clear up some of the confusion that people have. I would say more and more people are starting to understand that tariffs are bad for the economy. They're bad for the worker. They're bad for manufacturing. And they're bad for our trade relations. That's why for so many years we had free trade. And it actually wasn't until Trump took office back several in his first term. And then he imposed these tariffs in 2018. And in an upcoming video, I'm going to show you year by year, month by month, if you'd like that hard data, exactly how many manufacturing jobs there were in the United States across all sectors and how those jobs decreased in the years following his tariffs. Now, when Biden took office, he extended some of the tariffs, but he eliminated others. And it was only then that some of these manufacturing jobs came back. And I'm talking over a period of years, 2018 to 2024. That's a long time for somebody to be out of a job. So I'm all in favor of the stated goals of tariffs. Unfortunately, tariffs don't work. Fortunately, there are other things that can be done, like the government spending within its means, lowering income taxes so people have more money to buy goods and services that actually increase and improve the economy. We don't want to increase inflation by driving up prices, and we don't want to put people out of jobs when we shut down the import sector. So let's focus on what we do best, and let's take care of our national security in ways that make sense. And thank you for sharing this video with others who may be confused. And I did my best not to be snarky. I didn't have any too many nicknames. I did call Howard Lutnick Howie Lucknick because he was very lucky that he didn't go to work that day on 9/11. I'll do a deep dive on Howie if you're interested, because boy, does he have an interesting background. And I think it's important for you to know who these characters are that are on the world stage, and I'm using that word on purpose. Friends, I'm going to take a look at your comments offline because this ran quite long tonight, and I will respond to your comments in an upcoming video because I'm going to continue my series on the tough truths about tariffs. Thank you, everybody, for being on board. Sign up for that free Substack, peggyhall.substack.com. I'll try my best to summarize what we talked about in this video so that you can reference it and increase your knowledge as well. Thanks again, and I look forward to seeing you in the next broadcast.